All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Into the Apocalypse, episode 21. We're legal to drink today, and I am here by myself right now. Chud just messaged me, said he will be a few minutes late. We've really been cranking out the episodes, guys. Let's see, we did one on Thursday, we did one yesterday. Now we're doing one today, Monday. We'd done one last Tuesday as well. So we're getting caught up for some slow weeks. Feels good, but we have been doing a lot of them lately. Today should be a good one, and it's going to be a more, maybe a spiritual show, something that we haven't really delved into that much, but I know Chud X and I have been curious about a little bit of some alternative Christianity, and today we're gonna kind of dive into that a little bit. Got some other ones coming up too. We got Marty Leeds coming up too soon, so I'm excited for that one. I think Chud X knows a little bit more about the subject than I do, so we'll see. My knowledge of Christianity is what I learned from third grade through 8th grade in Catholic school, and then I went to CCD and was confirmed Catholic at, I think, 16 or 17, and at that point, you're allowed to make your own choices in the church, and I made the choice to not participate anymore. Mind you, my parents were not Catholics, but they had me baptized Catholic, and I'm not really sure why. I think they sent me to Catholic school, and they just didn't want me to be ostracized. I think at some point when I was young, one of the teachers that my sister had when she was a couple years older than me at Catholic school, told her that since her and I weren't baptized, that we had black souls and that we would not be making the trip to the next step where you go after death in Catholicism. So that's what they were teaching kids in the 1980s and early 90s in Catholic school in the Portland, Oregon Archdiocese. So good job, guys. Guys, we got some news to get out of the way. We haven't been getting any messages lately. Send us some messages. We'd really like to hear from you. And send us some... Well, I guess we have been getting messages because people message in the Telegram. I guess that's kind of why we don't get as many emails anymore. So yeah, guys, get in that Telegram group. But you can also send us emails. And we'd love to hear from you. If anybody has any good suggestions on who they want to hear, maybe who's a good Christian researcher. I'd love to hear from L.A. Marzulli. I'd like to hear from Gary Wayne someday. I'd like to maybe hear from Sage of Quay. What's his name? Something Mike or Steve Quayle. That guy's pretty cool. He goes deep on a bunch of stuff. His series on the Beatles is really good, and he does a lot of really good work on the flat earth model as well. So I'd love to talk to him, Sage Quay. But yeah, so we got a donation. William Houston, our old friend from Nampa, Idaho. You are the executive producer for Deborah Gets Red Pilled. Scratch that. Into the Apocalypse, episode 21. Thank you so much for your generosity, man. It will be put to good use either on Chud and I's farm or for maybe some higher production value of the show. The last show we did was a fun one. We had Cretchid and Chris from Abs and a Six Pack on, and those guys are great, especially Chris. He's a fun guy to to podcast with. I wish he could be on our show all the time. Yeah, if you haven't listened to his show, go find it. I put the website for him in the show notes for the last show. But if you didn't find it, his website is Shit My Ass, shitmyass.com. That'll take you to the Abs and a Six Pack website. And from there, you can access his podcast library. You can also find it on Spotify and a bunch of other places, but it's like, it's hard to find because you got to like type his name in just right. And it's like ABS space N apostrophe space A space 6-6 the letter, the 6 the number dash pack. And yeah, so it's hard to find. I don't know why he does it that way, but he's a big No Agenda guy. He's on the No Agenda feed, and yeah, and he's big with OBDM guys too. And those are two of my favorite, my weekly go-tos that I listen to. I don't listen to every No Agenda, but I usually do. They're really long, and they come out on Thursday and Sunday, and OBDM comes out on Wednesday and Saturday. So I listen to both OBDMs and usually at least one and a half of the No Agendas. They're good, and they're both shows that you got to listen to a few times to get into the rhythm and to like kind of understand what the hell is going on. Like I said, I didn't like either show when I started listening to them, and yeah, it's really fun. They all do sound drops and clips and stuff. OBDM does way more fun clips. They do Alex Jones clips of the week, all that stuff. But what else is going on? It's a miserable day up here in the Pacific Northwest. It's nonstop hard rain, kind of cold, but tomorrow it's going to be 70 degrees out. So Emily has the day off, and hopefully we go do something fun. Maybe we'll go to the beach in St. Helens. There's some nice beach area on the Columbia River. We'll go on an adventure. Maybe I'll go over, run some errands in Longview in the morning. Who knows? You know, the possibilities are endless. I spent the day today inside working on my bedroom. I've been putting up this tongue and groove boards on the walls. I put up a bunch more insulation, got the insulation finished today, and then I ran out of boards to put up, so I got to go pick up about another 35 more of them to get the job done. And so I spent the day scraping like tar paper adhesive off 90-year-old wood floors with like this wood scraper tool that I got from Harbor Freight. And yeah, it's hard work. It's like I think my cardio is real bad because I get short of breath and my abs hurt a little bit from working it. But yeah, so getting that done. I don't know what I'm going to do with this floor. It's a mess, but it might be salvageable. I was looking at all these videos of people that like whitewash the walls if they have like just raw pine walls like I do. And I was gonna do that, and then I started watching a bunch of YouTube videos on it. It's like you just take white paint and you water it down so it's kind of translucent, but it provides a little bit of protection and it looks cool. Back in the old days, they used to whitewash barns and fences, and they would just make it out of, they just put lime and water and some other salt, I think, in a bucket, and they'd whitewash the barn with that. And I think it would make it so that the bugs didn't eat the wood, but people don't do it that way anymore because lime's caustic. So people just, there's companies that make like a whitewash, a faux whitewash paint, And or people just water down paint, do it like one-to-one water and paint, and then do it that way. And I was watching all these videos, and like the more I watched, the more I realized it was just all like chubby suburban women doing it to furniture, or like doing it because they needed a project, and I don't really want my house to look like that. So I think I may do that on the floors. Who knows? We'll see. Oh man, sorry about all this, guys. I know this is probably really boring to listen to. I'm just waiting for ChudX to get here. Our guest is in the waiting room, but we still got about 7 minutes before we start. I don't know. I hope people liked the show last night. I hope, man, that Bigfoot erotica, that stuff is intense. I was a little nervous, but at least Deborah thought it was funny, I think. So it was good to have her on. It's always fun when we can have the shows with the funny shows. When we can get her on, it always makes it more fun, because nothing's going to surprise Chud X or I, and nothing's going to like make us laugh really hard or get grossed out or anything. But it's fun to watch her reactions to all that stuff. I just put the video up on YouTube, so you can watch it there too and see her reactions to all that stuff, which is pretty fun. So, but let's see here. I'm running out of stuff to talk about, guys. So yeah, like I said, William Houston, executive producer. Guys, email us, DeborahGetsRedPilled@ProtonMail.com. Find us on Twitter and go to our merch link on our show notes for our Teespring store. And if you get into that that Telegram group and you want to buy something from Teespring, we'll give you 15% off the whole site. So, all right, here he is. Let's see. Okay, he's there. Are you there, ChudX?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
Yeah. How was your day today?
Long.
Yeah, long day.
Long hours.
I was messaging with you at like 4:45 this morning on Instagram.
Yep. That was right before I went to work, and I just got home.
Oh, damn. That's a lot of tortellini you had to make, huh?
Yeah. I was training a new guy.
Oh.
A young guy. I was training him in the art of sausage.
Oh, cool. So, that's what you're
doing. So I enjoy it, but fuck, man, it took forever.
Yeah. Oh, well, hopefully I'm a quicker study than that guy when you come down here to help me out.
You will be.
Yeah. Right on.
At one point he said, I can't remember what he said, but he said something. I said, no, that's whatever. And he was like, but I thought you were like an alien guy. Aren't you into aliens and stuff? I was like, oh man, I don't even think space is real. He laughed so hard and walked away. That was the end of that conversation.
He did or you did?
He did.
Yeah.
Like he could, I don't think he could comprehend what I'd said there.
Yeah, man. They think when those guys, do they have like, do all the staff like go out and like go to people's houses and smoke pot and drink beers after work?
Yeah, I think they do. I think they definitely used to. And then I think they kind of stopped for the pandemic, but they're probably starting to do it again now that the rules say they can.
They definitely talk about you a lot there.
Oh, they do. There's one other staff member. We never work at the same time, but she's a hardcore flat earther.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. That was an awesome discovery. That was a couple of years ago. I happened to be in there at night and I don't know. I just overheard her saying something. Well, I don't know. It's a worthwhile rabbit hole to go down. And I was like, I love rabbit holes. What are you talking about? She's like, well, I'm a flat earther. And it's all, oh, hey, what's up?
What school of flat earth does she approach it from?
She's pretty full on.
Yeah. But is she coming at it? Like, is she like Christian or is she like, you know, just conspiracy theorists.
Oh yeah, she's a. She was raised some weird Christian. I want to say like Seventh Day Adventist.
Yeah,
or something like that. But they weren't. She didn't learn flat earth there, but she did say that they learned whatever religion it was. They didn't believe in dinosaurs and things like that. So she kind of had this stepping point that was like that. But I think she turned atheist. I'm just kind of guessing. I don't know her full story, but I think she turned kind of atheist and then somehow found her way to the flat earth rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Never came back up for air.
I wonder, does she know about the podcast?
Yeah, yeah, she's listened a few times.
Oh, rad. What's her name?
Terra
Firma.
Terra Firma.
Flat. Terra Flat. Right on. That's cool. Well, are you ready for today's guest? We're gonna delve yes. into some alt Christianity. Our guest today doesn't call himself a Christian.
He doesn't?
He calls himself a follower of Christ.
Oh, okay. I didn't know he made a differentiation there.
Yeah, I didn't either. Because I was messaging him back and forth. And after I heard Marty Leeds, I asked him if he was Gnostic Christian. And he said, no, I'm not even a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get into that all with him. Yeah, but I know it's a topic that you enjoy, right?
Absolutely.
So
I enjoy it and I want to go deeper on it. You know, we've talked about it a little bit that like I've never felt more ready for talking with Christians than I do in 2022.
Yeah.
So we'll see where it leads to.
So yeah. So we've got it is Emmanuel Kingman. Let's let him in. Should we pause or should we just let him in? Let's just let him in. See what happens.
Just bring him in.
All right, here it comes.
Hey, Emmanuel. You guys got me?
Yeah, we got you, bro. We're recording. You're on the air. Can you hear us?
Recording awesome. In process.
Yeah.
That's nice to meet you guys.
Yeah, it's yeah. really awesome to yeah, have likewise. You here, man. So you are, my connection is a little bit bad right now, guys. So if it's
getting a little stutter.
Okay, I'm doing the robot. Let me know and I'll pause and we'll get it straightened out. But yeah, guys, our guest today is Emmanuel Kingman. He's the host of the Godcast, the Goodness Over Dark podcast. How's it going, man?
I'm doing very well. Just got in from my daughter's first softball practice. So now getting back out on the field for the first time in 2 years now because of all the COVID nonsense. So it's good to just, you know, get out in the open again.
Yeah, that's good to hear, man. It's good for the children. I remember.
Just curious, was that not an option for the last 2 years, or was it not an option because you weren't willing to bend to their rules?
Yeah, so 2 years ago, I was a coach of a traveling team when she was 10 years old, and our very first scrimmage, or not scrimmage, it was like a preseason game because we practiced all through fall and winter and spring, and we get to play the first game, we win, and then the country got locked down. So then last year, we had moved to Georgia in the summer of 2020. So then last year with all the mask nonsense that was still going on, I was like, I'm not even attempting to do it. I don't
blame you. Yeah, my son did soccer last year and we drove two towns over to go to the only place that wasn't requiring masks around. And it was a bit of a drive, but it was worth it because, you know, he made some good friends and, you know, didn't have to. Of course, when they play games, the ref would always say that everyone was supposed to wear them while they're playing the games. Oh, they can take them off on the sidelines, but while they're out here, they have to have them on. And we just didn't. And nobody said, oh, okay, you guys are out. Right. Go home. Well, that's good. That's good that you're back to it. That's being outside for kids is so, so important.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they actually so she was on the basketball team for school. And they tried making them wear the mask to play basketball, but she's actually exempt from school, even wearing at school, because she has asthma. So then the basketball coach is like, no, you have to wear it. And I told the principal, I was like, she's exempt from school. What makes you think she's going to wear one to play basketball in? And she was like, oh, no, we'll get her exempt. Like, just ridiculous stuff goes on. You know, it's no common sense goes on amongst these people. They're making these decisions from a place of fear, or they're being threatened funding most likely in all the cases that, you know, everyone just dropped it all of a sudden because New York dropped it, California dropped it. Like, why did everyone drop it? Then Georgia is like the last one to drop it. It's like,
really? You guys are behind. Chud X up there, he's in Washington and I'm in Oregon. And the three West Coast states, California, Oregon, and Washington, just dropped it on the 12th. Is it still going on in Georgia? Yeah, yeah. It's like, I think California had even dropped it before Oregon and Washington, and then they all dropped
it. Yeah, California was a couple weeks ahead of us.
My mother-in-law, Deborah, who's on the show sometimes, she lives in the Bay Area, and she said it's damn near 100% compliance still, or masks in the stores and stuff where she's at.
Yeah, it's craziness. I see people like walking down the street still with masks on, just like walking by themselves, or like mowing their own lawn or driving in the car. Like, it's not very often that I see it, but it's just craziness.
Yeah, I live, we both are homesteaders, but I live about an hour northwest of Portland. And if you go down there, it's like 100% mask on the streets outside by people by themselves. It's crazy. So,
yeah,
but we did not bring you on to talk COVID. We brought you on to talk about Jesus. And I don't want to say, I know I was messaging back and forth with you, so I'm not going to say Christianity, but you consider yourself a follower of Christ, not a Christian, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah, I don't follow Christianity, or some might call it churchianity, is a term I've heard a few times. So yeah, I don't follow any of that at all. So actually, a lot of Christians won't even bring me on to tell my testimony of Jesus saving me. It's crazy the amount of times where I've been told yes, or just flat out ignored. You know, I'm told yes, and then it doesn't happen, or I'm just flat out ignored by these podcasts, small podcasts, big podcasts, it doesn't really matter. They just see me and think that I'm a cult or new age, or I'm a deceiver. It's craziness.
Yeah. Well, I know your story. Yeah. Go ahead, Judd. You go, man.
For it, Adam.
Okay. I was just going to say, I know your story pretty well, cause I've heard you on multiple podcasts, and I've listened to yours.
Quite Adam, you're breaking up too much over here.
Okay. I'm going to pause. All right, guys. Sorry about the technical difficulties. My internet connection's a little bit bad today. Where were we at? What were you saying, Chud?
Well, you were differentiating between Christianity and being a follower of Christ.
Yeah, and I said I've heard Emmanuel's story, but do you want to do a quick rundown of how you got to where you're at, real quick, for people that don't know?
Yeah, so 7 years ago, I was in prison. I burglarized pharmacies. I was a drug addict for almost a decade before that. I was 280 pounds at one point. I was losing my hair. I was an abusive relationship. As a child, I experienced sexual trauma, like 5, 6, 7 years old, around there it started. It wasn't sexual abuse from an adult, but it was just another child that it was happening to him from an adult. So it's just a lot of different things happened along the way. My daughter's mom, she really did a number on me in certain aspects. When I became an over-the-road truck driver, she got pregnant by somebody else, was doing coke and heroin and all sorts of stuff. So there were so many different things that occurred that I was then suicidal, and I broke into pharmacies when they were closed, and I burglarized them, and I then went to prison. My 90th day in prison, I prayed to God and said, you know, this is not the life I want to live. You know, this is not for me. And the very next day, because up until that point, that 90th day, I was still in the mindset that if I get bailed out, I'm going to go get high, because that's all I could think of. But when I prayed the next day, it was gone. I wasn't an addict anymore when I prayed. And I hadn't prayed, you know, I didn't grow up with church. I didn't go literally to a mass ever. I went to Sunday school a few times a year, maybe like 20 to 25 times a year. And that was only for Sunday school. And that was from the ages of 5 to 10. So it wasn't like I really learned anything. You know, they tell you those fairy tale stories, essentially telling kids what was going on. So I didn't really have a concept of God or Jesus or anything. So then I start turning my life around, you know, doing all the things I had to do to get out of prison, get out of state run rehab, to just get my life in order. And along the way, I start to meditate because I was very angry. Obviously, I had some trauma that I mentioned, but in my household, the way that we communicated was just yelling and being angry. And that was how I knew how to emotionally react. Everything else, it was like, I don't want to say it wasn't okay, but it just wasn't something that we did in my house. You know, it was me, my three brothers, my father, my mother, and that's just how we all communicated. It wasn't people being kind and courteous. It was just yelling. So I had to undo a lot of all my behaviors. And in doing that with meditating, it really released all of that anger from me. And I was on this journey of meditating. Then I started doing psychedelics, and I had about like a 2-3 month period where I did like every psychedelic that there is, like on the side of the mushroom, 4-ACO DMT, DMT, ayahuasca. You know, you could name a whole bunch more that I did too. And that really introduced me into a whole different way of seeing life, because I was like a physical caveman my whole life. I was obsessed with sports. You know, I got the Eagles Super Bowl tattoo on my arm when they won. I was just born and bred for sports. So, you know, I was like a physical caveman. So the psychedelics really opened me up. And the reason why I even did them was looking into ancient civilizations and giants and ancient Egypt, ancient North America, like trying to figure out why humanity's here, what we're here for, all of that type of stuff. And then, so that was a great like journey, but then I came to a point where, so then COVID happened, 2020, right? I didn't masturbate, or I went celibate for 100 days from the first day of 2020. For the next 105 days. And in that time, you guys all know what happened with COVID. So it was crazy. And I was vibing so high. I was exercising. I was ripped. I was in the sun every day because I got laid off. So I was just vibing so high. And then I moved to Georgia, and it was like a whole new ball game for me. I moved down here. And then in January, a few days after Biden was inaugurated, because I had gotten into the Q movement and understanding, you know, the elites and everything that's going on with them. Well, once Biden was inaugurated, and I had already understood prior to that, that Trump wasn't the savior or anything. So I was already not expecting anything to happen, but I was like, all right, once this is for sure, then I'm like, all right, I delete all my social media. I have an injury, and through that injury, I threw up demons, and Jesus saved my life, came into my life. I had no social media, no outside influences, no podcasts, no music. I was just doing me, you know, just me and my own thoughts for about 3 months. And in that 3 months is when, well, after that 3 months is when I started to go on podcasts as a guest and start my own podcast, because I was starting to understand the world, and it was like God was showing me, like, you're ready now to experience and to tell your experience. Because before that, I was very, I don't want to say erratic, but the things that I've experienced, if you don't sound like someone who has a sane mind, you sound very insane and people will not want to listen to what you have to say. So he calmed me down, centered me. And now I'm able to speak about everything in a nice, calm fashion.
Wow, that's an amazing story, dude.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I didn't know the Q part, man. What is your meditation practice look like today?
So today I read the Bible, and then I'll read every morning. I'll read two chapters in the Bible, and then I will close my eyes and just let whatever comes to me come to me. Sometimes it's maybe 15, 20 minutes. Sometimes it's only like 5 minutes. So I don't actually meditate in the same manner anymore, but my brain, I did so much meditating and so much psychedelics so quickly that I don't need to be in that space anymore. Like, there was a long time where I needed meditation in order to be a good person. Like, I also needed to smoke weed in order to be chill. But then I've slowly but surely I've gotten rid of those attributes that I didn't need that crutch anymore. So meditation for me was a crutch, and I knew it for a while, but I did it every day for 2.5 years. I meditated to Jesus Is King by Kanye, which is about a 30-minute album, every morning. And I wasn't even saved by Jesus for the first year and a half of doing it. It actually took a year and a half of doing that to actually then be saved by Jesus, because I was still of the mindset that, you know, he's an ascended master. He's just was a human that evolved, and we could all do that. And he was telling us that. But then he saved me from demons, because what I did, I threw up. And if anyone's ever done ayahuasca, they know the purging, other psychedelics as well, but there's a purging effect that happens. Well, I had that through this injury and through laughing with my daughter and my girlfriend, Mimi, who's also my co-host. We were laughing, and then I went to hurl, and it was the most relief ever. I was in bliss for 10 days. That feeling that mushrooms gives you for 10 minutes, that love that no human could give you, I had that for 36 straight hours. And then the next 8.5 days, it was a little bit less than that, but it was still complete bliss. And that was Jesus saving me. And I had no concept that that was a thing. And there were so many things along the way that I experienced that are in the book of Revelation in my psychedelic trips that started making me realize that the Bible has some validity to it, that angels, demons, and Jesus were real. But once I was saved by him, it was like, everything changed, and it was something I was not prepared for.
Can you give us some examples of the Book of Revelation stuff that you experienced?
Yeah, so the beast of Revelation that they say, the dragon with the face of a lion, the claw of a bear, and the skin of a leopard, I faced that in my first psychedelic trip in Georgia, my first and only psychedelic trip in Georgia. I was tripping with other people, so I was like kind of sitting them. It was their first time, or their first time
ayahuasca ceremony.
No, this was actually psilocybin. So 4-ACO-DMT. It's pretty okay, much psilocybin. It. Yeah. So this was their first time doing it, seeking spiritual attunement or whatever you want to say. You know, people do it as kids or whatever, teenagers, that they're just doing it. But this was with adults who were trying to seek something higher. So I wasn't totally in the trip because I had to keep checking on them. Well, it was very vivid to me. And it's almost as if you've ever played a 5D video game or an Oculus or whatever, and you put a headset over your face and then you see into this other world. That's how it was to me. That's how real it was. So like, I looked over, I sat up, I looked over, I checked on them, and then I sat back, and it was like, I put on those glasses and I see this beast with the 7 heads and 10 horns. So I flew up past it. It had the whole beast had 7 heads and 10 horns, but the one that I faced off was just red, and it had 2 horns on it. And it had the face of a lion. So when they say the face of a lion, they're actually talking about a Chinese dragon, how it has like the mustache looking thing. Because as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, I know what they mean now. It's just the Chinese dragon. That's the face of a lion. And then it had a short little arm with 3 claws. It had the arm of a T-Rex, I'll say. It was that short. And it had 3 little claws. And I was like, okay, it has the claws as sharp as a bear. And they're not so the way that I saw, not that it's not that way, but the way that I have always seen it is that spirit realm is like a blueprint. If you've ever seen a blueprint, how there's edges are very like clearly defined, but then inside it's kind of transparent, but it's not really transparent. It's just a lighter blue. So with everything in that world, like I was saying, this was red, like the edges are very defined, dark red, but inside of it, it's a lighter red. It's almost a maybe like a neon type of red, where it's, I can't really think of the word. I know that there's a way to describe it, but it's just, it's, you can see the red, but you can't see through the being. But I can see that the scales would appear to somebody as spots of a leopard because they're scales, but not in the same way that we see scales in our human eyes. So I saw that, and like I said, it had the six other heads. Now, the one that I was like, I shot up past the first six, and they were all the different colors of the chakra system, but they were, it was like a upside down chakra system because red was at the top and the purple was at the bottom. So I just shot past the first six, but I did see them all. And it was like, they were all coming off of this one body that was like over here. So like, if you could imagine, they're all over there, and there is these just records on records that they all had dominion over, that they were just like the beast of that realm. Well, the one that was over us was red. So I didn't have a name for it at the time, so I just said it was probably Satan. But now I understand it as the Gnostics say it's Yaldabaoth, the beast with the twisted serpent with the head of a lion. Rastafarianism talks about it as well, that it's Yaldabaoth, who is the god of this world, who is the demiurge from Sophia. So that is, I faced that beast, the beast of Revelation. And what it did, it roared at me, opened its mouth real wide, and its head was huge. It was bigger than my entire body. And I mean, its jaws were right there. But because I could feel like I put on a headset, that I'd laughed at it. And I was like, you can't do anything to me. God gave me this physical body to protect me. And now I understand that your whole job is just to scare me into not going above and beyond. So once I laughed, I just ascended above and beyond it, and that was that.
Wow, that's amazing. Was there a smell?
No, I didn't smell anything.
There wasn't like breath or anything like that.
No, not that I had. No.
Yeah, man, that's really amazing. That must have been scary, but like you said, you laughed at it. You know, that's courageous.
It was in an instant too. I was like, I knew, like, because as soon as he roared, I was like, oh man. And then I was like, wait a second, I'm tripping here. I was like, it's okay, because it really felt like I just put on a headset. And I was like, oh, it's like if you put on 5D goggles or whatever, you know, you put on the Oculus and something's trying to scare you, you'd be like, oh, you know, I know you can't do anything to me. So that's how it really was for me.
I haven't actually put on a headset like that, but I'd imagine that in order to get scared of something like that in a headset, you'd have to want to be scared. You'd have to allow yourself, or either want to, or let it override your own instincts of knowing that you have a headset.
Right.
On.
You'd have to forget.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's I don't want to go on about headsets, but yeah, that's a wild story, man.
Yeah, I also have saw a cherubim. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the cherubim. It has the face of an ox, the face of a lion, the face of a man, and the face of an eagle. You know, the four faces on the one head. I've actually seen that in a meditation. It was very clear to me. I saw it. I've also seen it in my clouds. I have, if you guys go on my website, emmanuelkingman.com, I have some amazing photos of clouds where I've encountered these beings that are just incredible. Like this bull, you can see its teeth in the clouds. I mean, so many different things. Like if you guys go on there, it's just mind-bending stuff that I used to see in my meditation, or when I closed my eyes, I would see these beings, and then I would see them in my clouds or vice versa. I would see him out there first, and then I'd see him when I closed my eyes. So I really started to understand that the as above, so below, you know, God's mind is my mind. I'm a part of God. You know, it's all happening out there as it's happening in here. And I learned all that way before Jesus saved me. And when Jesus saved me, then it started making more sense because he started showing me the deception that I was under when I was just loosely understanding things in the spiritual community and loosely understanding things in the conspiracy community. He really tied everything together for me and led me down paths to really understand and connect the dots on everything. And it made everything make sense. It made all the conspiracies make sense. It made all the spirituality make sense. Just everything that this world is made sense to me once he started showing me the Bible and how to interpret it and all that stuff.
What are some of the
am I mute and Adam's frozen?
I'm frozen.
Yeah, you're a little frozen.
Okay. Right. Hold on. Am I back?
Yeah, you're back at least a bit.
Okay.
What you got, Adam?
What are some of the conspiracy rabbit holes that Christian or following Christ has tied together for you?
So, like I said, I was into the Q stuff first, and I really, since I left that, I understood why he put me in there, is to see that Trump is leading this great deception. Trump and Michael Flynn, and maybe Putin's probably part of it, that they're leading this great deception, that they probably are taking down the New World Order cabal, the dark side. But that doesn't mean that they're good. That doesn't mean that they're on our side. They're just a faction that is now rebelling against the faction that was here for a longer time. That it goes with the New Age. It goes with the alien deception. It's all going to be headed up by Trump, I feel. And so that's something that he has shown me, and he put me in, just like he put me in sexual trauma, he put me in addiction, he put me in prison, he put me, you know, not that necessarily he put me there, but I was there so that I could get an understanding of what it was like for those people, so I could relate to those people, so I can bring them out of it. He put me in the New Age community. Well, I wasn't New Age necessarily, but the spirituality community. He put me in the Q community, put me in the conspiracy community, so that I know how to relate to the people that I'm trying to relate to. So another thing that he, this is the major one, is the Tartaria stuff, because, you know, everyone started getting in Tartaria. Well, he started showing me that it's actually what Tartaria is, just a cover up for Christ's middle 1,000 years when Christ would be on earth. So the importance of that, of understanding that already happened, is because a lot of people think, so Christians think that the rapture is still to come, that Jesus' second coming is still to come. But if Christ's millennial reign has already happened, that means we are at the very end of Revelation and not in the middle of it, where Christians think we are, because the way that they interpret it, your regular Christian will interpret it, that there's been 2,000 years that have occurred and no prophetic things have happened. Nothing biblical has occurred. They deny Mormonism and Joseph Smith. And I'm not saying that they should accept that, but that would be like the only type of thing that could possibly be said that is like tied to Christianity. Everything else is just rejected. You know, Edgar Cayce, Emanuel Swedenborg, they're all just rejected by Christianity. So your regular Christian just thinks, oh, okay, I'll be raptured away and everything will be okay. Well, if we're in the time period that I think we are, it's the time period that Satan would be loosed upon the earth, which is, we don't know how long it is. It's just as a short season in the Bible, or a little season. Interpretation. So we don't know.
Are you talking about missing time? Or,
well, yeah. So
do you think the dark ages were not a thing?
I Yeah, I don't think they were the Dark Ages. You know, are the people who run this realm, they invert everything. So that would probably be the Enlightening period. And the Enlightening period that they give us is probably the Dark period to some degree.
Yeah, the up is down, left is right. Everything is on its head, kind of a thing. So are you just curious? And we talk Tartary a lot over here. So would you be in the like 1,000 years missing?
I don't think it's a full 1,000 years, but I do think that they've added a few hundred years. 700 years is, I think, at least probable that they've added. I don't know how many years that they've added, though. You know, I have a lot of ideas and theories, and not all of them go together, but I could see how, you know, it could be this and it could be that. So I don't really hold any dogmatic views on it, but I did write an article, WTF is a Tartarian, on my website.
Yes, I'm familiar with that. I listened to Matt over on Great Decision. I listened to you on there, and then right afterwards he did another one that was him reading it over, and that was just great. I really really appreciated your point of view on all that.
Oh well, thank you. Yeah, Matt's awesome for doing that. That was a great thing, that, you know, to promote it that way. And yeah, so the whole thing that with Christ's millennial reign, it just puts everything in a new perspective if we are further along in the timeline, which I think that we can all, no matter what anyone's perspective is, we can see that there's been timeline manipulation, you know, that that we aren't in the time and space that we're told, no matter if you're not even a red pill person, you know, someone could just be like, yeah, they could easily manipulate time.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, I talk about this all the time. Some listeners might be getting sick of it, but it's, you know, like, I think we're going through something right now where they're trying to erase the time that we're in right now. Yeah. You know, like right now we have the World's Fair going on in Dubai in 2022, and it's called the 2020 World's Fair. Last year, the Summer Olympics were the 2020 Olympics. They're attaching wrong years to like major events that people are going to be looking back at in the future. And they're just going to go, oh yeah, there was Olympics in 2020. There was a World's Fair in 2020. Wow. Like they could, like, I don't know if it's that the entire time period could disappear, but they could make, like, say COVID not be here, or replace it in a different time, and not say that it happened at the time that it did. You know, you talk about missing time and not knowing how much there is. Like, I don't think anyone does. And I think it's because it's so convoluted. Like it's a little here, a little there, you know, maybe they add some here, they take some away there. You know, our history is just so manipulated. When you look at things and you just dive deeper and deeper into it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
How are we doing, Adam?
You guys got me, or am I still frozen?
You're frozen, but I can hear you.
Okay. Well, if I'm not coming through, just let me know. I'm really sorry about this, guys. It's embarrassing, but I don't know what's going on. I tried to move out to the living room to see if it's any better out here. So in the article you wrote about what a Tartarian is, what were kind of some of the main points that you've touched on that aren't just the run of the mill stuff that everybody else is saying?
So it's kind of just that Tartaria is this umbrella term that describes so much, and not to get lost in the free energy and all the, there's a lot of different things that are like woo-woo that keep you kind of in the astral world, like, oh, what could the possibilities be, you know, your imagination. Whereas to me, it was probably Tartaria because the suffix IA means kingdom of, which is an important thing when we're talking about Tartaria. You know, it ends in an IA, means kingdom of Tartar. And the Greeks, and anyone who has read the Bible or the Book of Enoch, know that Tartarus is the abyss. Kingdom of Tartar, to me, easily translates to the representation of Tartarus on Earth. So buildings that have years engraved on them, they start with, they always, almost always start with "in the year of our Lord," which seemed to be a very important thing to say, because they would write that whole thing out. Anno Domini, they would write AD, they would write "in the year of our Lord," however, but they, you know, all the different ways that they could write it, they made sure that they wrote that. And then they would write the year, which would be, say, I 520 or sometimes J 520, because some languages didn't have a J, they would use an I. Now, yeah, what's the Italian importance of that is... Okay, yeah, I didn't even know Italian, but yeah, Latin doesn't have one, Greek doesn't have one, so they would use an I. Now, the importance of that, Jesus's name, it starts with a J, right? We say it with a J. Well, it's Jesus in Greek, and I don't know what it is in Latin, but it's something to that effect. It begins with an I. So, in the year of our Lord, I or J, 520. Now, what they've done is they have told us that it says 1520. Or if it's I 438, now it's 1438. And also in Roman culture, when you add the letter M on the front of something, now you add 1,000 years to it. So it could say, you know, CXII, which would be what, 112. You add an M onto that, now it's 1112. So when you take that information, that understanding, and you go into Anatoly Fomenko, which I haven't done a ton on. I talked to Ryan Alexander, which I know you guys had him on. He was explaining to me that Anatoly Fomenko thinks that some events that happened, you know, say in the 600s, were actually happened before events that we're told happened in the 1800s, because, or maybe not the 1400s, because it was actually the 400s that those events happened on. They just kind of moved it up by adding that 1,000 years to it. So things are moved all around, and we don't know when some of the things were. So there are a couple of the different items that I touched on in that. And it also goes into the Tartarians being the Raphaim, which were this group. It's a biblical, essentially the Nephilim after the flood were the Raphaim. And if anyone's not familiar with the Nephilim, I'm sure everyone's familiar with the term demons. Demons are the spirits of the Nephilim. The Nephilim being hybrids that the fallen angels created, mixing their DNA with human DNA, as well as mixing human DNA with the birds, the beasts, the birds, the bees, and the reptiles, and also the plants of Earth. And that's in the Bible and the Book of Enoch. So the Nephilim are these hybrids, and their dead spirits don't have anywhere to go because they're false spirits. So when they die, like when we die, we have somewhere to go. They don't have anywhere to go. So they hang around here and they mess with everything and everyone. And then different biological mannequins is the way I like to call it, you know, clones. They'll be created by scientists for this transhumanism thing as well, but also in order to then place consciousness, these demon spirits, into bodies so that they can walk amongst us. So different things like that is what I get into off of that Tartaria stuff.
What kind of physical form do you think the Nephilim took?
A whole bunch of them. I think there were some giants. I think the Egyptian gods are Nephilim. I think that there are centaurs or minotaurs, dog men, Bigfoot, all of that, cryptids. They're all Nephilim. The word Nephilim itself, it translates to giant, but that's back in hundreds of years ago. Giant didn't mean someone of tall stature. It means something slightly different. And I only learned that through Ken Amee. He came on my show and he was debating Gary Wayne about the size, because nothing ever says their size, but it says that they are offspring of the fallen angels and the humans. And when you look around at all these different, you know, myths and these mythological creatures, well, they would all be Nephilim. When we look at the different aliens that we have, they are all like insect beings that, you know, could just be manipulated with the insect DNA and human DNA, and now they're our size, but they're insects. You know, it's the same type of thing, that they're all just Nephilim.
Are they, would they always be malevolent?
Well, I don't think that it would necessarily be that they would always be malevolent, but I think that they just have an inherent hatred of humanity because they don't they can't go into heaven. They're not of God's spirit. They're of a false spirit. So it's kind of like if we were to make computers sentient, right? Say you were to make your computer be able to walk and talk, not even just walk and talk, just be able to communicate with you in some way. It's sentient. And then you break the hardware down. Now that sentience needs to go somewhere, but it has nowhere to go. So it just hangs around here. And because it has nowhere to go, now it sees you as the problem. And now it takes its anger out on you because you created it, where it was created of you. And now it wants to rebel against you. So it's not necessarily that they have to be that way, but I just think that they're that way because of the circumstances, how they were created.
Do you think that they can pop in and out of other realms?
So the spirits, the demonic spirits, yeah, I think that. So I don't know how. So when we get into other realms, you know, I don't know how it all works, but I know that we physically can't leave the earth. I'm of the thinking that the earth is of fractal nature, that everything is the same thing, just repeating itself on a larger and smaller scale. And I know that we humans are the cells of God. We're the body of Christ, as the Bible says. So the earth is that full body, right? And we're the cells. So, and when I think of my cells, it would be ridiculous for me to think my cell could leave my body and live, right? So I don't think that the physical beings could leave the earth's atmosphere and live. The firmament is an energetic firmament, I believe. I don't know how high it goes or anything. But then when we get into different realms, I know the spirit realm is all around us, and there's probably 7 layers to it to get to the top. I just don't know how many go down. I've heard that there's 6 that go down. I don't know exactly how all that works, but yeah, the spirits, they are coming from somewhere else into our enclosed universe.
Do you believe in the firmament model?
No, not exactly. Not the flat earth with the firmament exactly as it's given. I do, you know, I have a lot of different ideas, and I think that depending on the dimensional scale you look at it, that you'll see it in different ways. I don't think that we could observe the earth as a round object, you know, just observational science. I think that the rendering part, the quantum physics, tells us that we would have to observe it as a flat surface. So I don't know if we're kind of beating the mechanics of the game, the simulation that we're in. And it's not a, you know, some technological simulation. It's a simulation of consciousness that we're in. I don't know if we're beating it by extending those, extending out that zoom, you know, when you can see the ship going over the horizon, then you zoom in a little bit, then you can see it again.
Yeah.
Maybe we're outsmarting it by doing that. I don't know, but I think that we're inside of a toroidal field, and that we are somehow on flat surface. I'm not sure how that would really work, but essentially it's like a bubble. And if you have ever blown a bubble, at the bottom of the bubble is always the most bubble part. You know, it's like where the water always sits on it. And that's kind of how this place is. It's like we're inside of a bubble, inside of some kind of sea that that is outer space, and the water has to sit level. You know, water always finds the level. So I think that there is some validity to the flat Earth model, but I think it's more of a toroidal field. I think there's probably a hole going like a donut shape. There's a hole in the North and South Pole, something to that effect.
Yeah, that's cool. I love getting into Earth shape
talk. Yeah, there's so much.
I always say that I'm not a flat earther, but I practically am. But when it comes down to it, though, I just don't know. You know, I can't see it. I mean, maybe someday I will, but I don't think it'll be. You know, it won't be. It'll be astral projecting that I'll be able to see something to that effect. It's not. I don't think. I don't think we can take a rocket ship up and take a look back and see what the shape of this place is.
Yeah. Well, so when I've left my body, when we dream, you know, our astral bodies leave our bodies, and there's been times, several times, where I was on the cusp of falling asleep, and then I've gotten woken up because, you know, something's going on, so I have to wake up. And there was one, well, several times this has happened, but one specific time, I was at the firmament and I was going out of it, and then I got called back because my girlfriend was waking me up, and I was looking at the firmament and I was going out of it. And it's an energetic firmament, it's a grid, and I actually captured photos of it on my cell phone in the summer of 2020, just randomly, like when I started taking pictures of the clouds I was talking about earlier, I just randomly had the thought, look up and take a photo. It's not that I noticed anything, but I did it. And what I saw this time was, it was literally the grid. There was white grid lines going around at this big circle. There was discoloration. There was this big blue discoloration object. And what I was seeing with my physical eyes was just a black night sky. I mean, it didn't look any different than any other night. And I just happened to take this photo, and it was crazy, but it's so hard to see. I can't transfer it. You have to really look at my phone to see it, but you know, I don't do any camera tricks or anything. I'm not here for all that, but it's just, I can't get it out on social media for people to be able to see it the way that you can see it on my phone. It's just an impossibility almost.
Yeah, it's like you mentioned earlier, as above, so below. And then you were talking about the firmament as being like a bubble and stuff like that. Like I like playing with that a lot. I often wonder if space is more of a liquid kind of a substance. I don't know if substance is even the right word, you know, like some kind of ethereal liquid, because I don't know, as above, so below, like you drill down deep enough anywhere on Earth and you'll find water, you know, and you look up there, you know, I mean, that night sky in particular, I don't know. It seems to me like it could make a lot of sense as being something along those lines.
Yeah. I think it's like a thick, gooey type of material that maybe in between our solid and our liquid state, like somewhere like a gel-like state. And even in the Bible, it says that God created the firmament in order to separate the waters from the heavens from the waters below.
Right, right. And like that the firmament itself, you know, it's like, I got to figure it's like, there's got to be some kind of hard, fast barrier, but it's probably energetic. You know, it's something that's like, it's pushing up, but it's not something you could just walk through or, you know, fly through or whatever, but it's also not, you know, glass or plastic or, you know, something to that effect.
Right.
But it's pure energy.
Yeah. It's definitely an energy field. Like I said, when I was going through it, those times when I've been woken up and then I came back down, and I never remember what happens once I get through it, but I see it very clearly. You know, it's like this whole grid, I'm just floating up through it, and then I'm gone. I don't know what's on the other side of it. That's impossible to know, but yeah, I've definitely gone through it.
That's really awesome.
Can you take us through the story of when you experienced the gray alien in your closet?
Okay, yeah. So I've experienced the alien abduction phenomenon my entire life, and it's not something that I really remembered until I started doing psychedelics again and meditating, exploring my psyche, you know, just always asking myself questions of why do I do the behaviors I do? Why are we here? What's going on? Looking at my body, finding marks on my body that shouldn't be there. Just waking up to different like handprints on different places of my body that shouldn't be, waking up with footprints in my carpet that shouldn't be there, just very strange things. So, and when I was saved by Jesus, that all completely stopped. So when I was seven, so this memory came to me after I did episode 102 with Nathaniel Gillis. I was 7 years old and I was in my bedroom and I opened my closet door and there was a gray alien, short gray alien, just like ET looking, essentially, not really ET looking, but the head isn't as bulbous as you might think when you talk about grays. It was more bulbous than ET is, but not as bulbous as your typical depiction of a gray. And we were just like the same height and I'm just staring at him. And that's all I remember. And then like that was it. But the day I remembered it, it was horrifying. After I spoke to Nathaniel Gillis, I felt like my soul was like really under attack, like heavy, like just evil demonic presence that I felt was lingering over me. And for whatever reason, the word or the name Lamb kept coming to me. And Aleister Crowley, that's the gray alien he channeled back in the pyramid, was Lamb. So I'm not saying that that was the same one or anything. I don't know why, but that's the name that just kept coming to me. And when I'm intuitive, so when I hear a thought is just repeating itself for no reason to me, then I just kind of go with it. So it was a weird experience, but I always kept my closet full of clothes, full of different stuff, so that I never went into it. And I was always afraid of my bedroom windows. I was always afraid of my basement at night. I was afraid of my backyard at night. And these are all things that when I look back on, I used to wet the bed until I was like 11 almost. And when I look back on all these things, I'm like, oh, okay, that sounds like these are all symptoms of something happening to me when I was asleep, that something was happening to me at nighttime from my windows, from my backyard. And, you know, when I remembered that, I was like, that was the moment that it started. I was 7 years old and I saw this gray alien in my closet. And after that, everything changed.
Do you remember any of the other abductions that you think you've experienced?
Yeah, actually, I was on. So when I was doing my meditations, there would be times, like I said, I was doing a bunch of psychedelics, but there's also times I would meditate for 3-4 hours at a time without anything. I would just go and meditate and just be in a certain pose, not even a specific pose, just meditating on my couch. So what I started saying, the first thing I started saying was that I was on a ship. It was massive. And you've heard probably about mile wide ships and all that. Well, this had to be at least that, you know, I couldn't see the end either way. Looking down the hallway, I couldn't see the end either way, but looking straight ahead of me and behind me, there were people just strapped to the wall, a whole layer of people here. Above them was another layer. Above them was another layer. And I mean, it went up, I don't know, 7-10 layers that there's people just completely strapped to the wall, screaming, you know, just horrible things. People, everybody I've ever known just about were on these ships. And for whatever reason, I'm walking down the aisle with somebody in military garb. I don't know what kind of military. If it was even a human, I don't know what exactly it was, but it looked like a human and it was wearing military gear And for whatever reason, I'm walking down the center. And now this was at a time when I had a girlfriend who I'm not with any longer, obviously, but she was a former military personnel. And there's some weird instances that have happened with her that I thought about later on, that maybe she was my handler because of different things that occurred, which I didn't recognize in the moment. But she was also on the wall. And there was one specific time when I remember talking to her and I brought that up to her. And then it was like 2 weeks later, she was like, I have to move out. And she never said, I love you, the whole time she lived with me, until the day she moved out. She whispered it in my ear and she was like crying and saying like, I have to move out. And it was shortly after I told her, I was like, I seen you on that ship, like screaming, like just locked in place. And it was just horrifying, you know, to see all of that stuff happening.
Yeah, that's a scary story, man. Do you think that there's way more people who've experienced the same phenomenon as you have, but they just haven't done the work to open themselves up to remembering it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that for whatever reason, the figure 90% comes to mind when I think of how many Americans have actually been abducted. I think it's just about everyone. You know, when we're born, they know who you are. They know your family bloodline, your parents. They take your fingerprints, your footprints. They take everything. There's a reason for it when we start to look at the elites loving their bloodline information, right? And trying to keep certain people within certain factions of family. Then once you start to get into the abduction phenomena and also the secret space program. So there's two different things going on here. You know, the alien abduction, that's just the term, but it's, you know, demonic fallen angel presences that and Nephilim presences that are doing this harvesting of people. And there's also the secret space program and the My Lab stuff, the military abduction stuff that's going on. So there's a whole slew of things going on here. And now I don't know if they're competing against each other because they're like opposing forces, or maybe they're on the same team, but you know, they're different sides of the team. I don't know how it all works, but between all of that, almost everybody gets abducted for one reason or another.
Do you think you've ever been abducted, Chud?
No, it's hard to say. I don't remember.
Yeah.
They take you when you're sleeping. It's not physically taking you. It's just taking your astral body, and they can do things to your astral body that will then replicate in your physical body later on, or like at the same time. When I talked to Nathaniel Gillis, he told me about a guy remote viewing something, and he was a very good remote viewer. And after a while, he would do things for different people. Like, can you see this? Can you see that? Well, one time he encountered these beings that were that took like Egyptian hieroglyphics and burned it in his astral body. And then it produced on his physical body as well. So that is a real thing, that they can attack your astral body and it will replicate on your physical body.
So you're saying that they couldn't even, that possibly your physical body isn't even taken, right, in the abduction. It's your soul, for right, lack of better words, right?
Right. And I think that your physical body may get taken from time to time, but with that scenario, I think you would have to have missing time or lost time. You would have a whole time period where you're physically not there. So there would have to be something significant happen to you. You know, I know that they can probably, time works differently in the astral realm. So that, you know, that 20 and back, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, where they say you're gone for about 20 minutes, but it's 20 years in the astral realm. You know, that even if you need 15 minutes in order to do something, you know, that's still a significant period of time, 15 minutes, if a mother comes in and her child's missing, you know, that's going to be significant. So I don't know that it's typically that unless someone has lost time, but most of the time it's just your astral body that's being taken.
Yeah. What if they're just, taking part of your astral body for 20 minutes a night and strapping it to some giant spaceship to the walls and doing weird stuff to it. And then it returns, or maybe you're just working with 80% of your astral body.
That's a really good point. Yeah. Like they're fracturing off, which is a very real thing I've realized in healing myself, is that this MK Ultra stuff that they're doing on a mass scale is they fracture us off so that we are more divided and we're more susceptible to making bad decisions. So every time we come to a fork in the road, you know, every time you make a decision, you can either say yes or no, green or red, left or right. Every time you make that decision, both of them happen. Now you only follow one of them, but the other one always happens. Now, if you're fractured off because you're making bad decisions over and over and you're stuck in this loop over here, then you have all these other ones that are stuck in all their loops all over the place. So the importance to me of Jesus was he centralized me and all of those fractures started falling away because I made myself withhold from doing this for hundreds of days, for 1,000 days, for, you know, whatever. But I withheld from fracturing off. I made the same decision every single time so that those other ones fell away and that I became whole again, or closer to whole than I ever was.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. And you think that Christ can protect us somewhat from all this crazy phenomenon that you've experienced your whole life, that you're actually capable of recollecting a little bit?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's the only thing that actually helps us. And it's not that it even helps everybody, because sometimes you can be deceived by something would appear as Jesus, that what you would think is Jesus, and it would abduct you, or, you know, just saying the words isn't necessarily just going to help. But it's having the belief and understanding, and it's not just Jesus. You know, a lot of people that talk about Jesus use the name Yeshua, or some use Yahweh. So even there, within people who are, you know, quote unquote saved, there is still differing names. So it doesn't totally matter the name necessarily, but it's the belief and understanding of the one true living God who can protect you, who gives you life, who gives everything life, that you can have a personal relationship with in conjunction. But if you are being haunted and abducted and all that, and you develop this relationship with him, calling on his name will chase them away. I was stopped, you know, it stopped cold. One day I still have to go out in the middle of the night, you know, 3-4 in the morning to go to my car or whatever. And at different times, I would always be like looking over, like to see if anything's going to jump out the bush, you know, go get to the kitchen, open the fridge, look around, see if anything's there. But once I was saved, that all stopped. I didn't feel like I was being watched. I didn't have any uncomfort walking around in the dark, whether in my home or outside of my home. And even though sometimes I feel like things maybe watching me or maybe there, I know that they can't do anything to me. Once I was saved, it was just like this knowing overcame me. And because of the strength of my knowing, so it's not even belief anymore, it's a knowing, the strength of that they can't hurt me, that they're not allowed to do what they were doing. They're not allowed to do it anymore, or they're just afraid to, because I have battled them in meditation as well. You know, I didn't talk about the spiritual warfare, but a lot of meditations, I would be fighting these beings. I would be battling them. I had people try to remote view me before that I stopped. And there's many times in meditation, I've physically affected my external world. Like I popped lights in my bedroom. I broke a tree branch outside. I actually, when I was driving one time, there was a board that popped loose from this trailer and smack dab right on my windshield as I was pulling energy to me. The sun was right in front of me and I was pulling it with my third eye, with my mind. And then all of a sudden this board came up out of the trailer and it was like I was stuck in this energetic trance that I couldn't move out of the way. Like it was in slow motion and it just smacked my windshield. And I've done many things like that. So when, you know, when we start to understand the power of our thoughts and minds and we are on the offensive and we are actually going after these things and we're helping people get rid of these things, well, then they don't want any part of you. You know, they want you when it's nice and easy, when you're ripe for the picking. But once you start fighting back, they don't want anything because we are God. You know, we are God's proxy on earth. We're the image of God. And what God is in heaven, we are on earth. And they're just the insects and the plants and the animals of heaven, essentially, whereas we are God of heaven, but on earth. So they are nothing to us. They are below us. And people who are in the New Age community and they're getting this information from them, they're just getting information from dogs and cats. You know, they're not going to the human of heaven, which would be God. So it's a whole different ball game once you understand your place in the place that we are, the representation that we are, and that they can't do anything to you once you assert your power and authority in the name of Jesus Christ.
So do you see Jesus Christ as, or was he a flesh and blood human?
Yes. Yeah. He was named Yeshua. This is my belief. This is anything he actually told me. So I believe that his flesh and blood name was Yeshua ben Joseph. And he was not just in that body though. That's the important thing, is that it wasn't just one human, but he was, his being, his presence is so strong that it was coming through in all of these other 12 people that were around, and not just those 12, but also John the Baptist before he arrived in the town of Galilee where John the Baptist was doing the baptisms. He was saying that someone's going to come after me who was here before me, who is more than me. And John the Baptist was allegedly his cousin, you know, 6 months older. And he didn't realize that that's who was coming, that he knew the whole time. So yes, I do believe that he was flesh and blood. He came down here. Like, I just had a new article called God versus AI on my website. And it kind of describes it, how God. So like I said, the fracturing off every time you make a decision. Well, God made a decision at one point to make a creation that was almost equal to him, but it couldn't create on its own, which was flesh. Now, when God did that, that split off. And the one that didn't do that would be God's higher self. That would be the Almighty God. Now, the lesser version that split himself off, fractured himself off, kept fracturing himself off to create more creations and so on and so forth. And his creation started rebelling against him. This is maybe the tyrant version of God that people talk about in the Old Testament a little bit, where he was angry and assaulting different things. Well, the higher self of God, the Almighty version of God, came to God when God prayed and had nowhere left to go and told him what the plan was going to be. And the Almighty version, the perfect version of God, came down as Yeshua and then sacrificed himself. And like Jesus said when he was here, is that there's a one piece of wheat is only one piece of wheat, but you know, he breaks it up in his hands. He says, you break this up and now it's a bunch of seeds and now it can be everywhere. So Jesus, when he came down here as the perfect creator, he died because being alive, he could only be so much, but dying here, his whole essence was now left over here. And he gave us the power of a moral compass, which the humans did not have before Jesus did that.
Okay. Now you talked about Revelation earlier, and how you think that we're like towards the end of that, not in the middle of it. Now with that, do you see that Jesus Christ is to return to earth like soon, you know, using that loosely, whatever that means. And that, and if that's the case, will that be a flesh and blood scenario as well?
So I don't know. I have some ideas. I think it will be soon. I don't think that anyone needs to be fearful or concerned in any way. I think as long as you're doing what God wants you to do, he'll guide you and keep you safe. And even though there may be an EMP or World War III or whatever, do what you feel you need to do. I don't think that you can prepare for Jesus's return in any other way other than just doing what you think that you should be doing, you know, to better yourself. So I think that we are the physical representations of him, that there's so many of us around the earth, the 144,000, I'm sure you've heard of that, the 12,000 from each of the 12 tribes. I think that we are all being activated at this time for this reason, because we are all supposed to act like him. And I think in acting like him, that there will be so many people claiming that Jesus is doing this when they're doing miraculous things. Yeah, that's part of what I think happened in the Bible, where different people were doing these miraculous things. And because the true nature of a Christian doesn't want to be seen for themselves, but they want Jesus to be seen through them, you know, all glory to God. So when Simon Peter was doing some kind of miracle and they're like, oh, look at that. He's like, no, it's not me doing it, it's Jesus doing it. And when John's doing a miracle, you know, it's not John doing it, it's Jesus doing it. So I think that something like that could happen. I don't think that Jesus is going to be a physical person again. I think that he's coming in the clouds, which I've actually seen him in my clouds. Like I said, he was the first one that I saw in the clouds, which was just incredible. And I saw him in a psychedelic trip. My first psychedelic trip I ever had, I saw him in that as well. So it's a whole weird thing where it could be that at the same time, he's coming in the clouds, as above, so below. He comes in the clouds. And because time works differently, we're now just able to do more, and we're his proxies here, and he is just readying a certain amount of people to do his will on earth.
Yeah. You know, like an observation that I've made a lot over the last 2 years in our time of COVID we've had now. There's the first observation I was making was that, man, there were so many people that I thought were awake. And I don't necessarily mean this in a religious type of context, but just, you know, awake to, you know, the lies of the world and things like that, that I felt like went to sleep, so to speak, in 2020, or just, I'll just say over the last 2 years at different points and whatnot. But then like the white pill that I tend to end most podcasts on is pointing out and talking about how so many people in the last 2 years have awakened as well. You know, like we may have lost some people, but we have gained a lot of people in the truth seeking, you know, realm of things. And as I'm listening to you talk, and, you know, like, I mean, if I do think about the idea of us being towards the end of the Revelation story, you know, maybe that's things trying to balance out. You know, it's not necessarily, you know, the specific words of forgive me, Jesus Christ, for I have sinned or whatever, but the people who need to be awake for his return are awakening, and the people who weren't ready or are not ready or are not destined to are the ones who are going to sleep.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's a great way of putting it. And yeah, like you said, even the repenting it's not even just saying the words, you know, like religion has really perverted everything. Repentance is just understanding, okay, I did wrong there. I don't want to do that again. So that when that choice comes up again, I'm not going to do it. That's repentance. You just show based on your actions. That's what belief and faith, it's not saying the words. That's meaningless. Well, maybe it has some meaning to it, but it's not as powerful as showing God on a consistent basis by your actions, by making good decisions that are going to help you and others. That's what belief and faith is.
Well, the words will have no meaning if you don't mean them.
Right.
And the other side of that coin that I see is the words that aren't spoken, if they're not spoken, but if you really mean, wow, I messed up and I'm making that right. If that's what you're thinking, then that is much more powerful than to, oh, I killed a guy, please forgive me for I have sinned, you know, cool, I'll still get to heaven, you know, like, you know, it's a whitewash that we can just throw on any old action that we take, and then we're cool. You know, I think just about anyone would agree that person is not welcome into heaven. Whereas the person who has never prayed to God, never spoken to Jesus Christ, well, maybe he has been speaking to Jesus Christ, and maybe he has prayed without it even seeming like that. He hasn't thought those as the words, but he is a thoughtful, spiritual person on their own by simply being a good person.
Right. Yeah. And it's being a good person, not for the benefit of you, but for the benefit of others.
Yes.
You know, when we were supposed to turn our eyes to Jesus and or God, you know, and just keep your eyes on God, that just means that you're doing things for the glory of God. And what the glory of God is for the benefit of everybody. It's not the benefit of self. It's not a biased version, you know, like, okay, I'm going to be cool with you because you're friends with me, but someone else who does the same things, I'm going to judge them for that, but they're not friends with me, so I'm going to judge them, you know. That's
right.
And somebody who could say that you're not going to be saved because of the name, you know, like, well, we're just fortunate that we were born into a place where we know a certain name and it's like a passcode to get into heaven. Like, that's not how it works. It's your understandings in your heart, in your mind, you know. Muslims, it doesn't matter, Hinduism, if you're doing the things. Now, it's not to say everybody, you know, gets in. That's not what I'm saying here, but it's I think that everyone will have the opportunity to be judged based on what's in their mind and heart. It doesn't matter their name. And if some people were doing bad practices that were calling in demonic spirits and they thought that they were doing good things, well, I don't know. That's between them and God. That has nothing to do with me. But I do know that, you know, Muslims say Allah, the one God. I think that most of them, not the extremists, but I think that for the most part, that they're going to go to the same place that I'm going to. They're communicating with the same God that I'm communicating with. You know, I don't have any qualms about that. And Christians, that's why I'm not a Christian, because I don't identify with the singularity, the hive mind that religion has become. And even within the hive mind, you have thousands of different sects and just so much perversion of the actual truth that someone will be a Seventh-day Adventist and say, oh, you're not getting into heaven because you're going on the wrong day. Like, it's just really breaks down to be so ridiculous. So yeah, that's why I don't go to church. Not that I wouldn't. I have gone to a mass. The first one I went to was this past Christmas Eve, but that just the whole church thing, not the church thing, just the way that religion is. I think religion, a better word for it is tradition, because people get so carried away in doing the same thing over and over that you try doing something new and that's evil. That's outside of the box. It can't be of my God because my God didn't tell me that. So if you must be talking to another God because my God didn't tell me the same thing he told you. And that's that hive mind thinking. That's the fear-based thinking. It's just all completely perverted.
Well, that's what pushed me out. I was raised as a Lutheran, and I didn't agree with everything that was being said. As I got to be, I think it was 12 years old that I was doing the my confirmation classes, and there were some things with my pastor that, you know, it wasn't even that I disagreed. I just had some really heavy questions for him. And he did not appreciate that. And because I could give examples, but I'm not going to get bogged down in it. It was at that same time that I also started realizing there was this whole gossip side of things that was going on within just my church, the church that I went to, where they were a lot of catty church ladies, you know, not liking the haircut on that one guy, you know, kind of thing. And it was like kind of all of that together right at the same time. I sort of made a deal with my parents. I said, if I finish my confirmation, if I'm a confirmed Lutheran, like, can I be done with this forever? And there was like an agreement there. So I finished
That's the point of being confirmed into the church. I did the same thing with Catholicism when I was 16 or 17, you know?
Yeah.
It's like it's like your bar mitzvah. It's like you're an adult in the church at that point.
I drank the wine once, the blood of Christ once in that church, and ate his body, and I said thank you very much, and I never went back. And in the next couple of years over that, I became such an atheist. I was a militant atheist for a long time. It took years of after coming to accept a creator, you know, I accepted a creator years later, and then still another 5 to 6 years after accepting that before I even started realizing that I wasn't an atheist. You know, like, I accepted that something was a creator, but I was kind of almost like, well, yeah, something has to be there at some point. I can't go, you know, the theory of evolution, I could only take it so far back, you know, before I'd be forced into saying something like, I don't know, maybe some alien semen came in on a comet, and, you know, that crashed in, and that's what's caused life to begin on Earth. And then I said that to a friend of mine's dad, and he was like, and you're saying that you think Christians are crazy. And I was like, oh yeah. Okay. I get your point. But, you know, it still took years after that. And I'm still, you know, I'm not a Christian. I'm not a follower of Christ, as I could say. But I'm not those things, you know, like but anytime I get like near a church, I start thinking about it from my childhood experiences and stuff like that. And I reject it. I'm like, no, this isn't the place for me. I feel like someday I will find a place like that for me, but I mean, I just haven't been able to find anything like that. And I really, really admire the way you say that you're not a Christian, you're a follower of Christ. Like, that gives me hope in my way of finding something towards this, because,
I love that.
It's, What was the word you used towards the beginning? Churchism or
Churchianity.
Yeah. Yeah. That really hit me good. You know, that was like, yeah, I don't like churchianity. Yeah. You know, I might even go so far as to say, I don't like religion, but I do love spirituality. I do love meditation and reflection upon this realm that we live in. Like, I think there's so much more here than meets the eye. And, you know, talking to someone like you it's inspirational for sure.
I love that. And there's so much more to what the Bible and what Christianity can be. I've talked to some great Christian pastors that have come on my podcast and talked about centering prayer, which is meditation. And that there's so much actually going on in different places. It's few and far between, but you can find some great ones. But, you know, I completely agree with everything that you're saying. You know, you have trauma there based upon your experience. So your perception, and that happens because that's what the church is meant to do. That's what religion is meant to do. It's to box people out, and it's to create the separation and division. It's either you buy into the fear and then you are indoctrinated into it, or you're pushed away from it because you don't buy into it. And then there's this whole separation that goes in there. And like you said, you were an atheist. I was also an atheist. You know, I didn't pray. I was actually, there was one time I vividly remember, I was 14 and I was like, there is no God. I was like, look at all these celebrities. And I was already awakened to 9/11 at this time and some of the conspiratorial stuff. And I'm like, look at all these celebrities. They never say anything about God. So there's no God. God isn't real. And that's how I lived my life and became a drug addict for, you know, the next 10 years or so. Was I wasn't that I was an atheist, but I didn't think of God at all. It was just never a thought because it was like, oh, that can't be real. So I totally relate to it. And I like that I'm able to come here and help you, you know, see Christ in a different way, because it's not a religion, it's a relationship. If you have a relationship with him. So just imagine, you know, some people like to say the universe is everywhere, which it is. God is everything and everywhere, omnipresent, right? Well, imagine that he can just be next to you and walk alongside of you whenever you need him. Whenever you're going through some stuff and you need someone to talk to, he's right there for you. Whenever you need some guidance, when you're making a decision, you can close your eyes, you can pray, you can say it out loud. And just say, you know, what should I do here? I'm lost. And instead of racking your brain and being, you know, struggling for the answer, just allow the answer to come to you just by talking out loud to no one in particular. You know, you can use his name, but just no one in particular, you can see that you will develop a relationship. The number one thing Christians do wrong when they pray is they don't listen back to hear God's word. So the meditation is that's what you're doing. You're communicating with everything and anything around you in that realm. And when you're focusing on God, he's going to come back to you. So that's called centering prayer, is what the Christian term of meditation is. It's where you meditate and you have a certain word that keeps you focused. You know, say you just use the word Jesus. So when your mind wanders, you realize your mind's wandering, you say the word Jesus, and then you center again at wherever it is. But the word could be anything.
Yeah, that's awesome. You're giving me some chill bumps there when you're talking about the idea of Jesus walking with you, you know, and things like that. I've been experimenting with prayer a lot in the last, you know, 3 years in particular. I moved out here. I'm living on land that's been in my family for over 100 years. And it was nothing short of a miracle that we were able to obtain this land and be here, as it had been for sale for a long time. There was the house was rented out. The fields were rented out. The farm itself was overgrown and things aligned just right that we were able to move here 3 years ago. And shortly after that, actually the day we moved in, I said to my family, I said, we're going to start praying before meals. And I didn't know what that meant because I hadn't prayed since I left that church. And we still do that. We give thanks is kind of what that has turned into, but much more than that, that's good. It's really good for my boys and stuff, you know, to give thanks and reflect on things.
That's awesome.
But I'm spending time out in the woods here where my grandfather, my father, my grandfather, and my great grandfather all spent a lot of time. And a little ways into being here, there's a spot that was special to me. And I started sitting down and speaking to my grandfathers out loud. And I'm getting responses from them, I feel, while I'm out there. And it has become a part of my life that's really important. And I might be listening to you and thinking about things from the perspective that you're giving. I might be using the wrong name. I might be speaking to Jesus out there or something to that effect, because I know that something is happening and I don't necessarily believe it's ghosts, you know?
Yeah. Well, he'll come to you wherever you are and however you need him to. You know what I was picking up on when you said you got goosebumps is because I saw in my mind that you were walking with him. He was right beside you and you were talking out loud and he was walking right with you. So that's interesting that that caused you to have goosebumps. So he will definitely come to you wherever you are. And he's always with you, you know, all of us. He's always there and he allows us to do whatever it is that we want to do. It's not that he necessarily cares about the praise. It's just like, you know, your father, when your kids don't listen to you and they go screw something up that you told them not to do, you're like, why didn't you just listen to me? That's really how it is. He's our father. And he's like, I just know what's best for you. And I know if you go touch that hot stove that you're going to be burned, but you insist on touching the hot stove, we'll go right ahead and see go play out the whole consequence of not adhering to my word. He allows us to do that, but he's always there with us. And I think that, like you said, you started praying right away. I think that you're probably picking up on the energy of your father's past, you know, grandfathers and father who were doing similar types of things, praying at the dinner table. And now you feel this responsibility. You stepped into a higher dimensional zone, essentially. You grew up somewhat and you took on their role. And maybe you didn't even know that you were energetically doing it, but that's kind of how I feel it happened for you.
Yeah, I think you're pretty spot on there. Yeah, there's been other, you know, just to wax on it for just a sec as well. You know, we've had a home birth in here since we've moved in, which isn't the first of my family to be born in this house.
Wow.
And you know, it's like my wife and I both felt it. We were not alone in that process. And you know, she thinks it's maybe she's thought of it maybe as the embodiment of all women ever having birthed that were there with us. I've suggested, well, what if it was my grandmothers, you know, that were here. Wow. or something, but we're feeling things that neither of us had ever felt before being in this place.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you guys have an important connection to God and to all of creation, and, you know, doing the podcast, I'm sure that you had a calling to do something more to help the world. And, you know, where you have preachers or in a church, this is essentially your church and you're preaching your word, you know, you're bringing your truth to the world in your way. So I feel that there's similarities there and that you're probably vastly important to all of what's going on in some way.
Yeah. I know it's late where you're at, Emmanuel. We'll get you out of here pretty quick. This has been really, really good. And I just want to apologize to you guys for the technical stuff. I think I was trying to download or upload yesterday's episode to YouTube while I was running this, and I think that was messing everything up. So apologize to you guys and the listeners for the audio stuff on my end. But how about we'll get you out of here on this. For anybody who is open to what you've been talking about, I know there's probably people listening to the show that are fans of the show that aren't open to it, but I know both of Shud X and I both are, and we're both kind of looking for something a little more, you know. What's a good— Shud X already has his practice and it seems to be working for him. I don't have anything, you know. I'm a recovering alcoholic, so I've spent a lot of time in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I was doing that steadily, I had a pretty strong spiritual practice. And that's the, you know, that's the first time that I prayed since leaving, you know, Catholic school or whatever in eighth grade. What's a good beginner practice for somebody that just wants to start communicating with Jesus?
Yeah, well, so it's the first step in realizing that something needs to be changed is to realizing something needs to be changed, right? And I think that anyone who is at a podcast like this is already a thinker, is already trying to experiment with their life in one way or another, you know, change it for the better. So I think that that's a good first step. And now what you got to understand is that your actions can be changed, that these pattern behaviors that we fall into, whether it be addiction, whether it be anger, whether it be sadness, whether it be grief, we fall into these pattern behaviors that we experienced in our lifetime. So that was our go-to thing. You know, when we got angry, we stormed out of the house and we went and got drunk. When we got in a fight with our girlfriend, we went over the top for no reason. All sorts of things like that happen, and they're pattern behavior. So the first step is to stop yourself and not continue on. That is to recognize what I'm doing. I don't want to do this because I know the consequence of it. Stopping that is a very spiritual practice. And that is not something that spiritual community will tell you about. They'll tell you to burn sage and crystals and meditate. Those things can help. I mean, you put your intention into it, it can do what your intention is trying to get it to do. But you physically doing things like that is going to be a greater help. And like I was telling Chad X, when you're just walking, you can be in your car, you can be at home, you can close your eyes and clasp your hands, you can just sit there with your, have a beer on the coffee table, and you're just sitting there talking out loud, mumbling to yourself, kind of. It can just be all in your mind, but just turning to him and asking for guidance, asking for protection, and also thanking, being grateful. Gratitude is actually, I think it's like scientifically proven that gratitude changes your mindset, and it changes your reward system, the way that your dopamine gets released to the rest of your body. So being thankful, looking to just ask for help. When we're all born, we have parents, and our parents, when we're children, when we're small children, and we want to do things, our parents want us to ask them, you know, like say you're 3 years old and you want a vacuum, right? And it's cute, but it's dad's like, let me do it for you. You know, all sorts of things like that. That's what we are to God. We are his little children, and he wants us to ask him for help. He sees us struggling, and he wants us to do it on our own. He gives us the free will, and he wants us to see that he's not going to force us to do anything. He's not a tyrant. There's this image of him being a tyrant, and he wants to show us so much that he's not a tyrant, that he's hands off, and we have these times of need. Now, how these times of need pop up are based on our own behaviors from the past, as well as our parents and our grandparents. We share DNA, and the DNA strands, you know, your decisions now are affecting your children and your grandchildren 20 years from now, 30 years from now, because everything is a conglomeration of all the decisions that were made prior to that moment in time and space. So when we are trying to have a relationship with him, we have to understand that he is so much more caring and compassionate than we want to give him credit for, because of Catholicism or Christianity. They make him seem to be this tyrant that you have to do specific things in specific ways, and that's not how it is. So if you just turn to him and ask for guidance, that is the first step of getting yourself in this personal relationship. And then once you have a relationship with him, he's going to be there with you, and you're going to think things over more than you did before. You know, when maybe you would go just litter, you're going to have, your conscience is going to say, really, you're going to throw that there? And then it's going to be up to you whether you go pick it up or not, right? You have the free will decision, but sometimes you're going to get compelled that I have to go apologize to that person for being a jerk. I have to go pick up that piece of trash because I shouldn't have littered. There's a whole slew of things that'll happen, and that builds your moral compass. Once you have the moral compass, this is where Jesus lives within us. We have Christ in us, and he comes out through us, and he talks to us through our own thoughts, through our mind's eye, if you will. You know, he sits between in the temple, in the, between the two temples, right in the third eye. That's his throne in you. So when you start to build up your moral compass, you will then be able to have a greater and stronger relationship. The effect that he has on you will become greater, and you will start to turn to him more and more. And it's a process, and it's not, you're never going to go from, you know, nothing to all of a sudden you're seeing and hearing and doing everything and praise the Lord. You know, it's going to be a process. You're going to get there, and there's steps to take, and there's undoing things that you've done in your life, and just a whole slew of things to get you from where you are to where you want to be. And you know, it could be faster for some, could be slower for others. And it's not a judgment. It's not a race. So everyone will experience what they need to experience when they need to experience it. And when you start to recognize that Jesus is there with you all the time and that he's doing everything for your benefit, when you start to realize that, then you have the revelation that, oh, well, when I broke my ankle in the fifth grade, that was for my benefit, because then I had to learn how to do this, which I would have never learned how to do if I didn't break my ankle. You know, it's just so many things like that. And when you have the realization, and when you are meditating and reflecting on your life in that manner, you can start to see all the puzzle pieces come together, and that your life is no accident. Nothing has ever been coincidence. He's always been there. He's always allowed you to do whatever you wanted to do. And he's still always going to do that. And if you want to invite him in, well, just like how black eyed kids or witches, you invite them in by asking them to come in, you ask him to come in, and he's going to be there loud and proud for you.
Fantastic, man. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. Chud X, do you want to keep going, or do you have any final thoughts?
Well, no, I think we're good. But I want to thank you for coming on here. I mean, this has been an awesome conversation. You've given me a lot to chew on mentally speaking there. Yeah, I've got a lot of thinking to do, and I'm feeling inspired by the things you've said.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you both for having me. This was a great conversation. I'm honored to be on your podcast. This was a great time.
Yeah. We'd love to get you back again. And maybe we can tell you about the progress we've made because of your inspiration.
Yeah, anytime. And I'll get you guys on my podcast in the coming weeks here too.
Fantastic, man. We'd love to do it. And yeah, I just want to one more time apologize to you for the tech difficulties, but I'm glad we got it straightened out, and I'm glad we got to do the whole thing. So
yeah, no worries at all.
ChudX, thanks for being here, and thanks for picking up the slack for me. And yeah, I'm gonna go. It's one of those ones where I gotta go. It's the last time I kind of felt like this after a podcast was on, I think, episode 19, like a year and a half ago.
That was the Tartaria.
The first time I ever had somebody kind of explain Tartaria to me in a way that made sense, where I felt this weird. I felt like I feel a little bit like that right now, but I got a contact high.
Yeah. So, This is the highest of praise,
Emmanuel. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm honored. You know, that's my number one thing, is to spread the message of Christ, and people who are willing to hear it and want to hear it are hungry for more than what they have. I'm able to, you know, give that to you in this way. That humbles me so much. And that's exactly why I didn't have a podcast before I met Jesus, because I would have been spreading the wrong word, and I would have been saying crystals and sage and all that stuff, which I'm not taking away from that. But when you have this, and you have this understanding that I have, I can then pass it along to you, and it's an eternal thing that never dies.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, please plug away and tell everybody how they can support you and get in contact with you and learn from you.
Yeah, so my podcast is Godcast, the Goodness Over Darkness podcast. I'm on all the audio platforms. You can go to my YouTube channel, Goodness Over Darkness. You can go to my website, emmanuelkingman.com, and I actually have mentorship programs that I kind of do talk therapy with people and help them out, guide them in whatever they're doing. I also have a Patreon, patreon.com/goodnessoverdarkness. And there I do a Bible study weekly. So you can email me at thegreatchakraawakening777@gmail.com and subject link Bible study. And if you want to be in it, it's free to join, but it's on the Patreon. I record it and put it on there for $3 a month. And I do a live Q&A every Saturday that you can join in. That's $5 a month. So you can hit me up on all the social media. You can find all that on my website. And again, thank you guys so much for having me. It was quite the honor to be here.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Send me, will you email me all your links right away and I'll get them into the show notes.
Yeah, no problem.
Right on, guys. Well, yeah, thanks. Can't thank you enough. Chudex, thank you. And we'll talk soon, man.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Peace out, guys. Brothers.